All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on Yutet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah is discussing now the inks that can be used to write a get. So it says, Bechol Kotevim. You can write with any type of ink, which the Gemara then asks, well, then what does that come to include? Because they're going to give you a list of inks. So what is added by Bechol Kotevim? Bidio, you're allowed to use ink. I'm not going to translate them now because the Gemara itself we'll attempt to translate them, because these are found in the Mishnah many times. That which is found in the Mishnah, the Gemara in Bavel doesn't know or is not necessarily familiar with the words that are Hebrew words or Tanaic words, and so they translate them into their Aramaic. So when the Gemara translates them, then we'll go over what they actually are. Bisam, Bisikra, Bikomos, Ubikan Katum, Uchol Davar Shehu Shel Kayama, is one possible girsa. The other girsa is Uchol Davar Shehu Shel Roshem. So the Mishnah requires that you use some type of ink, and we give a list of types of inks that are fine, and the common denominator between them is either that they are a Davar Shel Kayama, that they are something that lasts a long time, or a Roshem, that leaves some sort of indelible etching inside of whatever you write, so that it's recognizable, the Tav, over a long period of time. In Kodvim, Davar Shel Yikayama would just be something of permanence or a long duration, whereas Davar Shel Roshem means that it leaves some sort of imprint, marking, etching on the item that you wrote on. So for instance, when you write on paper even, you could feel on the other side, you feel that there was some sort of impression made on the paper. So that would be the idea of Roshem versus Kayama. In Kodvim, lo b'mashkim, v'lo b'mei perot, v'lo b'chol davar she'enu mitkayem. So you can't use mashkim, some sort of liquids, or mei peirot, or juices. Similarly, the difference between them is that mashkim, as described by the Gemara in Shabbat, with regards to the Mishnah and Schita, certain fruits or items were used for their juices in particular, like olives, grapes, strawberries, or berries of sorts. They were squeezed for their liquids, and those are called mashkim. Mei peirot are other fruits that have liquids in them, but they weren't necessarily particularly used for those liquids. So for instance, apples, oranges, and so on and so forth, in their day they weren't necessarily used for their juices they were eaten, even though today we use them for their juices. So mashkim would have been items that are standardly used for their liquids. Whereas mei peirot are other fruits that have liquids in them, but they're not always used. And that's the difference in schita and shabbat. Schita d'oraita, squeezing out liquids from a fruit, d'oraita only applies to olives and grapes. Everything else is midrabanan, and then there's a machloket about certain of the fruits in the middle, which are like tutim, berries. V'lo b'chol davar she'enu mitkayem. And on the other side, anything that is not permanent in nature, you can't write with. Now, ala kol kotvim. So here we spoke about the inks. Now we're speaking about the quote-unquote paper, that which it's written on. So you can write on anything. Ala leshel zayit. You can use an olive leaf. Most of the Rishonim over here explain that the leshel zayit, or the uniqueness of the leshel zayit, is that it lasts. That it's the type of leaf that even after it's picked, remains intact for a long period of time. And that's what the Mishnah is after, is telling you that you need a davar shemitkayim, something that has duration to it, similar to the ink, so too the paper that you write on has to have a certain amount of duration, and the leaf of the zayit lasts for a long time, doesn't go bad for a long time. The difficulty with an aleshel zayit, obviously, is that it's very small, so you can write a get on anything. There's no recommended size or minimum size for a get, as long as you can read it or it can be written properly. The Rambam, on the other hand, in Perush Mishnayot, seems to learn from this just the opposite. That Aleshel Zayit shows you that you do not need paper that is mitkayim. You simply need ink that is mitkayim. And therefore, as long as when it was written, it could be read, and the ink was something that would have lasted, the underlying paper does not have to be something that lasts for long duration. Valkeren shel para, on the horn of the cow. Venoten la ta para. And he gives her the whole cow. So two things here. One about the keren shel para, is, first of all, it's smoother than other horns or other antlers or anything that you find on animals. The keren shel para is much smoother, so you can actually write on it. That's number one. Number two is it has duration to it, according to many, because unlike other horns of other animals, it does not fall off naturally. It must be cut off. Therefore, if you wrote it on the Keren Shel Parah, it would remain for a long duration. Again, according to those Rishonim, believe that that's important here. And the last thing is he has to give her the Parah itself, because we have a rule, v'katov v'natan, that when you write it, the next step has to be to give. If you have to do any other pi'ula, any other activity in the interim, then it doesn't work. If you sever the horn between the time that you wrote it and gave it to her, then that activity in the middle makes it a pasul get, because then it was v'katov, v'chatach, v'natan. So it has to be directly v'katov v'natan, and that's why the Mishnah stipulates here that if he writes on the Karen of the Parah, he has to give her the Parah. Elim Kain, of course, the Karen Shel Parah was already detached before he wrote it. Ayad Yad Shel Eved, v'noten la de'eved. You can write it on the arm of a Eved Kanani, and then give her the entire Eved Kanani, for obvious reasons, why he has to give her the entire Eved Kanani, but here he's considered the Eved Kanani as a din-like property, and so therefore, like you would write on the Karen of the Parah, if you write on the arm of an Eved Kanani, the same status would be applicable. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says you don't write on anything that is alive, something that, like an animal, a human being, none of those are usable for gitin, and not on food items. None of those should be used. Again, the Gemara will explain what exactly the machloket is over here, but obviously Rabbi Yossi Aglili would like to see things that are of a more permanent nature and that don't move around or leave. All right, so now the Gemara goes through the inks that were mentioned in the Mishnah and translates each one of the items. So dio, it says in the Mishnah, is diuta. So diuta is a type of ink. If you look in the Rabbeinu Tam, the Tosafot brings over here, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, dio shelanu, hu karui dio. Our dio, our ink, that's what the dio is that it's speaking about. Lo otoshi osim afatzim, da lo mikre dio. And not the ink that's made from galls, that is not called dio. And he says, if you write with ink, that includes within it what's called afatzim, the galls, which we discussed before, that if they put that into the ink, then you have a problem now, because our Sifrei Torah, and we're going to see later on in today's daf, we've actually mentioned earlier in the Masechta, that you have to do ibud orot, that you actually have to tan the skins with afatzim in there. So we spoke about the fact that today we don't use the afatzim, so then how do we get over that problem? We replace it with sid or some other material that does the same thing or similar effect as afatzim. But what we're going to see in today's daf is that if you write with an ink that is similar to the underlying paper, then it's not called writing. When you're writing on the material that's of this similar nature, then you're writing basically ink on ink or afatzim on afatzim. And so that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says here. Since our klaf uses afatzim in order to make it, then if you have afatzim in the ink, that's a problem of writing with the ink that is made out of the same material as the klaf itself. And then the Gemara says, sam is sama. Now Rashi over here translates sama as orpiment, which is an arsenic sulfide, which has a yellowish color to it and was used for dyeing as well as an ink in those times. Sikra, which usually in the Gemara, sikra is associated with a red type of stain. Amar Rabba Bar Chana is sikrata shima. So again, a similar word. And Rashi says, tseva adom shikorim minio. It's a type of red dye, which comes from the minium. And komos is koma. That's a ink that is prepared from some sort of gum of the tree or sap of the tree. As you can see, if Rashi says, it's sraf ha'ilan. Kankantum, which we bumped into in other places, is a copper sulfide base. Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Amar Shmuel, charta dushkape. That this kankantum, this copper sulfide, but it's actually the blackening polish that is used by the shoemakers. That after they make the leather shoes and they want to blacken the shoes, this is what they used for it. And Rashi calls that an ornament. And then Tosafot has issues with that, because if you translate it as ornament, then it becomes similar to something that Rashi is going to translate in the upcoming Braitot. And therefore, Tosafot likes the translation of the Rashbam from Eruvin, which is that it is karka yiruka, that it is a yellowish, greenish earth, which is a copper base, Shekorim vitriol. And so vitriol, which is a copper sulfide, is what Tosvot likes to call this. And the Kan Katum is usually translated as a copper sulfide here, rather than what Rashi translated as ornament. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam says that when you make a Sefer Torah, you're allowed to put ornament into the ink, because it's not Kan Katum, and therefore it is permitted to use for the writing of a Sefer Torah. I mean, those are the broad translations of them. You should know that the Rishonim over here have many different opinions about each one of these items. Okay, so what does that come to include when you have b'chol kodvim or any davar shemitkayim? What does that come to include? It comes to include these items that Rabbi Chanina added. Kadvo me'taria va'afza kasher. If he uses this me'taria, Rashi says me'gishamim, rainwater. Obviously, it doesn't just mean plain rainwater, because plain rainwater would not be anything that was an ink. So it has to be something where the megishamim soaked something or fell off of something. Some suggest that it is the water that came off the roof that got saturated through the wood of the roof and then brought with it some sort of color to it. Rashi himself says, Meitaria maim shesharim bo pri, shukain afatzim gols. So he says that rather it's a type of May ataria and atza. You have two different ways to use the galls from the tree. Many times they use the oak galls, which are these growths that are on the oak tree, and you can prepare them in one of two ways. You can either boil them, or you can soak them. That would be the difference here between the may ataria and the atza are both using these galls, but one is preparing them, as Rashi says over here, when they are shoreh, when they soak them, and the other one is using it when they actually boil it, and they cook it, and that's how they get the pigment out of the gall. So both of those, Meitari v'Apsa, are kasher. Tani Rabbi Chiya, Kadvo b'Avar, b'Shachor, u'b'Shichur, kasher. If you write with, now, Avar is generally lead. You can look in Rashi, he says, Sheshaf ha'ofer b'mayim u'mashchirim. He doesn't mean literally with lead, but he rather means with shavings of lead that have been put into the water, and cause the water to darken into a black ink. So you're creating the ink by adding the lead into the water. So it's a liquid-based ink, not a solid lead, where you would write with the solid lead. That's the way Rashi learns it. And from that, you would conclude that actually, avar itself, lead itself, would be problematic, but ink that was made from a water-based lead would be fine. You should just know that the Tosfot read over here says just the opposite, that if you use avar itself, if you use lead itself, that it would be fine, but if you use lead that's soaked in water, that would not be okay. All right, then we have bishachor, which is, Rashi says is pachmin, which is coals, so it's using some sort of charcoal to write with. Ubishichor, Rashi says over here that it's chartadush kape. This is where Tosfot took issues with Rashi, because over here, the Gemara seems to be suggesting that the brightot are additive to our Mishnah, not repetitive to our Mishnah. And if you say shichur is the charta dush kape, which is the polish or the black that was used by the shoemakers, then this equates it to the kankantum that we mentioned before. And so Tosfot thinks that that's incorrect, and that's why Tosfot separated between the ardiment and the kankantum, where Rashi, who explained that the kankantum was ardiment, and said that's the same thing as the shichur down below, Tosfot was unwilling to accept that, and therefore he says the kankantum is this vitriol, or the copper sulfide, whereas the shichur over here is the ardiment that we were speaking about, or Rashi is speaking about, and differentiates between those two items. Others say that shichur is a different type of coal, which is, one is a natural found coal or charcoal, and one of them is a man-made charcoal, which is charcoal that's made from burning of wood, and then that charcoal is the difference. So that's the shachor and the shichur. All of those items are kasher. Itmar hamavir dio agabi sikra b'shabbat. One who uses ink and then writes over letters that already exist, but those letters were written b'sikra, which before we said was some sort of red-based ink. So he takes this blacker ink, or it seems to be here that it's a much better ink or writing solution. And he writes over, tracing over the letters that exist. Rabbi Yochanan Meir Shlokish, Damrei Tarvayu, Chayav Shtayim. In that case, you're Chayav two Chataot, Achat Mishum Kotev, Achat Mishum Mochek. You are Chayav twice. One, because you erased the existing writing that was there. And number two is because then you wrote on Shabbat. You created letters. Now remember that Mechika on Shabbat, you only Chayav for, which is Mechika Kedei Lichtov. Because otherwise, if you're just erasing on Shabbat, you're not Chayav, because that is Kilkul. That's just ruining something. In Shabbat, you need a Mlechet Makshevet. You need a constructive type of Melacha to be done. So the only time that Mechika is Asur on Shabbat is if you erase it in order to write. So over here, you actually, in one single swipe or motion, here you do both of them, which is that you erase the existing writing that's there, but you're writing on top of it. So you're erasing the old writing with better writing on top of it, and therefore you are chayav both for kotev and for mochek. Dio agabe dio, sikra agabe sikra patur. And then if you write with ink on top of ink, or sikra on top of sikra, this red on top of the other red dye that they used, then that is patur. Because there you made no improvement to the ink that exists. So again, your mechika was not a valuable mechika because the ktiva was not a valuable ktiva. Because the ktiva just did the same thing that exists. And then you lack melechet machshevet, which is a constructive melecha that does something that was better than there was before. And therefore, you are patur. Patur means patur aval asur, asur de rabbanan, but patur mi deuraita. Tosfot over here quotes the gemara that you're going to see on Shabbat, which is a very fundamental gemara. The case where Rabbi Yehuda speaks about the fact that if a Sefer Torah was written with Dio, but the Sofer forgot to be Mekadesh the Shemot, forgot to write the Shemot the Shem with the right intent on them, he can go back afterwards and trace over them and add the aspect of Lishma to the writing. So Tosfot over here says, you see from there that writing with Dio on top of Dio has an impact or has value to it. And so then why do we see over here when you're writing Dio on top of Dio or Sikra on top of Sikra, why do you say that it has no value? We see there that it has some sort of chashivut. Tosfot over here differentiates and says, V'omer Rabbeinu Yitzchak Delekaman, V'adai Shekatav Rishon Haya Shelo Lishma, K'tav Hasheni Oseh Lishma, Chashiv K'tav L'Rav Yehuda, U'L'Ravacha Afilu L'Rabbanan, Chashiv K'tav Gabi Get. So what he's suggesting over here is, yes, that would be considered k'tav when you do something constructive like this. Aval hocha, shekatav sheni inu metakein klum, afilu Rabbi Yehuda modelo chashiv k'tav. So Tosfot differentiates between the case there, where the new writing does something that is constructive in nature, which is that it makes it into a lishma, before where it wasn't lishma. So then on Shabbat, the same activity, the same action, in two different cases can have two different meanings. When you simply write with Dio on top of Dio, you've done nothing on Shabbat, because you did nothing constructive to what was there beforehand. On the other hand, if it was Lo Lishma, and you switched it to Lishma, then even though, again, you did the exact same thing, which was Dio on top of Dio, and you did not improve it in terms of the ink or the writing, but the Lishma aspect is an improvement, and you'd be Chayav on Shabbat in that case. Tosfot differentiates in that case and says there's a different din. One din is a din here, or possibly a din in Gitin. Whereas one is a din in Lishma, and that's why we would differentiate the cases. Some of the other Rishonim say simply, this is not according to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. This is according to the Shita of the Rabbanan, who believe that you can't do that. That you can't write over the ink in order to create the Lishma. And therefore, our Gemara is not following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. You don't have to reconcile between the two of them. It's just two different opinions. Then the last case is Sikra Agabe Dio. Amri La Chayav, Amri La Patur. So then when you write with Sikra, which seems to be a lower quality ink, so using the Sikra and you're writing on top of Dio. Amrila Chayav, some say you're Chayav for doing that, and Amrila Patur, some say it's not problematic midoraita. Amrila Chayav, Mochekhu, why are you Chayav? You're not Chayav for Ktiva, but rather you're Chayav for Mechika, because you actually lowered the quality of the writing on this paper. So when you use the type of ink that is of a lower quality, you erased the other ink that was there. And so Tosafot over here says, how can it be mochek? We just learned before that mochek al-manat lichtov is chayav, mochek by itself is not chayav. So Tosfot says, "Hachashiv leibochekum anachtov demistama omed lachzor v'lichtov alav b'dyo." Tosfot says the reason that it's considered to be mocheker is because after you lower the quality of the writing, most likely you're going to write with dyo over it again, and therefore that tiva is really a mochek almanat lich tov. And then when you write with dyo on top of the sikra, it is more noticeable, it stands out more, and therefore there's a constructive aspect to this erasing. Rashi, on the other hand, does not make such a qualification, and he says that mocheku v'lo kotev shemitchila ya katuv hagun me'ata. And so others explain Rashi to be saying, you do have mocheka manach tov, because you wrote. In the end, you wrote with sikra. Now, you're not going to be chayav ktiva, because from the side of ktiva, you didn't do something constructive. You did something negative or destructive, because you lowered the quality of the ink that was there. But as far as the mocheka is concerned, you erased the dio, and you wrote with sikra. Because the sikra going over the dio ruined this dio that was there, as if you erased it. And you now have writing with sikra. It may not be as good a writing, but you still did mochek amanat lichtov. And therefore they view Rashi as seeing the mochek amanat lichtov built in to what you're doing here, rather than saying, oh, in the future, like Tosfot says, you're going to write with yo on top of that, and therefore it'll be beneficial. Those are two different ways to understand the mochek over here. Amri la patur, some say you're patur, mikalkel hu. You're doing something destructive rather than constructive. And therefore, there's no reason to be chayav in Shabbat, because Shabbat requires melechet machshevet. Right? So, by minei reish lakish Rabbi Yochanan, edim shein yodim lachtom. If we have edim that do not know how to sign their names, again, in their day, that was a much more common phenomenon. Most people were illiterate, as well as most people did not know how to write. That's why sofrim were so important, I mean, in terms of both their literacy as well as their ability to write. And you went to sofrim to document things and to write for you, because you didn't necessarily know how to write. Ma'u, what is the din? Sheikhtavu lehem b'sikra v'chatmu. So what he suggests, based on the Gemara that we just saw, we should write it in sikra, and they'll come right over it, trace over it in dio. So then, we would consider it kitav, like we just said before. Tav el yon ktav, oenu ktav, is the upper writing, meaning the dio that you do on top of the sikra, is that deemed to be writing or not to be deemed to be writing? Amalei, enu ktav. Yochanan responds and says it's not writing. That's not considered to be writing. Amalei, valoli mantanu rabbeinu, ktav el yon ktav linyan Shabbat. We just saw before, Rabbi Yochanan v'reish lakish, the amrei tarvayu, that the gavei Shabbat, when you write with dio on top of sikra, that is considered to be ktav. So why don't you say the same thing by get? Because we think that we should extrapolate a din, therefore we're going to act on that extrapolation. Rashi says something interesting over here. Rashi says, maybe over there we were machmir, by the end of Shabbat we're choshev, that is a problem, but naseh maseh, now you want to be mekil, and use it as something to say that you would also be mutar to use it by a get? That's an extrapolation that you wouldn't allow. You can be machmir, but who says you can be mekel? By the case of Shabbat, it's machmir because we say it's asur. You're not allowed to do dio on top of sikra. On the other hand, over here, you're being mekel because you're saying the dio on top of the sikra makes it into a kosher get. So that'd be lakel. You can't do that. But then Rashi adds in something very interesting. He says that Rabbi Yochanan lives post Churban HaBayit. And since he lives post Churban HaBayit, he says, I'm not sure if we were in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, I would have told you to bring a korban, a chatat, in the Mikdash. Meaning that I'm only doing this mitzada safek, not mitzada vadai. And so that if the Beit HaMikdash was extant, I wouldn't tell you to bring a korban, because that could be chulin bazara. So I'm only saying by Shabbat it's asur, because there's no ramifications halachically from that, aside from it being asur. But there's no, you don't have to bring a korban, we're not going to give a death penalty on it today, because none of those are relevant today. So that's the way Rashi learns it, which is a step further than what is said in the Gemara here. He's saying that Rabbi Yochanan's whole position, the Gabei Shabbat, is a safek, and possibly not out of a definitive psak, rather just saying, why not be machmir, because there's no real implications to being machmir, except to say, don't do it. On the other hand, when you come to a get, where there are ramifications, but that we won't use it. Most other Rishonim read it simply, which is, what's true by Shabbat doesn't necessarily be true by Gitin. By Shabbat, the determination is not simply whether it's writing or not. You need Melechet Machshevet. Melechet Machshevet by Shabbat has a different definition than writing by a Get. And so just because something's asur by Shabbat, because of Melechet Machshevet, over there when you improve the writing on the paper by using Dio on top of Sikra, so on Shabbat that might be deemed writing or a Melechah because of Melechet Machshevet. Whereas over here by Gitin, all you have to have is writing. It doesn't matter. If you wrote it in Sikra, it's just as good as if it was written in Dio. And so writing in Dio on top of the Sikra might be nothing vis-a-vis the Gitin, because there it's not about Melechet Machshevet. And so you can't extrapolate a din from Shabbat to a din of Gitin. I'll just note here that generally the term of Melechet Machshevet by Shabbat is used the Kula, which just means that generally we say someone is Patur because it's not Melechet Machshevet. So someone can engage in an activity, and even though it looks like a molacha, and looks like everything that would be chayav, nevertheless, they're not chayav because it's not melechet machshevet. Like things like davar sheinu mitkaven, melacha shein tzricha de gufa, where it looks like you're doing the melacha, but it's not because it's not melechet machshevet. In rare occasion, melechet machshevet is the chumrah. Best example is in the Gemara in Baba Kama, by the case of Zarev Aruach Mesayato, where a person is, he's winnowing, through throwing it into the wind. Over there, the Gemara Baba Kama calls that groma, which is that the wind is causing it, and you would not be chayav for nizakim. Yet the Gemara there says, the Gabe Shabbat, you will be chayav, because that's your intent. It's Melechet Machshevet, you're trying to use the wind. So over there, Melechet Machshevet is used the chumrah, which again, is an unusual usage of Melechet Machshevet. Here too, it's possible that if you read like the other Rishonim, not like Rashi, Melechet Machshevet would also be used the chumrah over here, which is that Melechet Machshevet would make you chayav in Shabbat, but not considered to be ktav legabei gitin. And so once again here, you would have a manifestation of Melechet Machshevet being the chumrah where you'd be chayav in Shabbat, but would not have halachic application in other areas. Gemara says, Itmar, edim shen yodim lachtom. If you have edim that don't know how to sign, what do you do to help out over here? We need edim to sign, but they don't know how to write, or they don't know how to sign their names. So Rav Amar Mekarim lahem niyar chalak, umimalim et ha'kra'im. Diyo. We tear the paper for them, and then they fill it in with ink. We saw earlier, this was already brought back earlier in the Masechta, when we did there, Rashi suggested that the meaning of this is that they actually etch into the parchment, and then they, edim, fill the ink into those etches, and that's how they write. Most of the other Rishonim said it was stenciling, that you actually cut out a shapes of the letters and place them on top of the area where you wanted to write, and then they filled that with ink, the stencil area, and that's how they signed their names. Ushmol Amar Be'avar, that you use lead over here. Rashi says, L'shafshef be'chaticha shel avar, alaklaf u'mashchiro, eino k'tav. That if you rub with the lead itself on the klaf, and it makes it black, that is not considered to be k'tav. So what Shmuel suggests is that they wrote with some sort of ink that is not a good ink, and then having the edim write over it, then the first thing was not a ktav, and they just follow whatever is there, and then they write, and then it is a good ktav. On the other hand, Rav says that we do something that allows them to write without having writing there, which is either we etch it and have them fill with ink, or we have stencils which allow them to fill it with ink, and that's how you get to the letters that you need. So today you could do something similar, and Sofrim used this actually today, which is you can use an underlighting, and you can have the letters written on the underlighting, and then have it show up on the parchment that you're writing on. And by doing that, you're really almost in a sense tracing the letters. I mean, you always have to write the letters, you're not tracing. But today, many Sofrim use this, which is if you have an underlight, and then you have a printout of like the mezuzah, the tefillin that you need to write, you put that there, and then you put the klaf on top of it. When you place the klaf on top of it, the light from underneath shows through the letters that are printed out underneath the parchment. And when you write, it leads to many less mistakes because you have it printed out and you have it written and you get it in different font sizes and you can write as you want there and it makes it much easier. That's one of the requirements of writing is mitoch haktav. You can't write by heart. You have to write looking and then writing. So this solves that problem too because you're looking at the ktav there. So you're writing mitoch haktav gamke. You could have done similar thing over here, which is what they're trying to do. They're trying to have them write and it be considered writing without having them make mistakes or with having it already there. So somehow by creating the letters without it being writing. Again, you can do it today by that underlining or here, Rav and Shmuel are discussing methods for doing that. Bavar salkadatcha. Wait, you're using lead. Va'atani rebchia katavo be'avar b'shachor b'shichur kasher. Lokasha ha'ba'avra ha'damayid avra. So the difference here is one of them is real lead and one of them is water-based or soluble lead. And again, Rashi reads it as the soluble lead being the good ink and the hardened lead being the problematic ink. And Tosfot Reed reads it just the opposite. He says that Shmuel Lami lo yichshir ela b'mayid avra b'nei she'enu davar mitkayem. He says that you have to use the water-based lead here, and that's what Shmuel is referring to, because that is something that is not permanent. Whereas the case where you are, or the writing is good, is ba'avar, which is lead itself. And so the Tosfot Reed learns just the opposite of Rashi over here as to which is a good ktav, which is not a good ktav. And therefore he says here, Shmuel means the water-based lead, because that's not a good ktav. And that water-based lead, then you can write over it. And again, the halacha, the Rama Paskins, like the Tosfot Reed's reading, which is lead, is a solid lead, and that would be kasher, whereas the soluble lead would not be a good ink. Rebelbar, b'mei milin. You can use mei milin. So now, Rashi over here explains what's mei milin. Mayim shishara b'hem afatzim shchukim. It's a case where you took crushed up galls, and then you soak them in water. V'ha'atani Rabbi Chanina katvo b'mei tarya v'afza kasher. So this sounds like the items that we mentioned above, where you can utilize the galls for writing. And Rashi described over there was the soaking of the galls in the water. It seems like you're doing the same thing. So lokasha ha'da'afitz ha'da'lo'afitz. It depends on the klaf itself. The question is, was the klaf made using afatzim, or is it not used making afatzim? She'ein, mei milin, agavi mei milin. This is what we discussed before, that if the underlying writing material, the parchment, has the same material in it as the ink, or what's making the ink visible, or the part of the ink that makes the mitkayem, is the same material that's used in the parchment itself, then it doesn't work. And that's what Rashi explains over here. Hadafitza. Haklafim me'ubadim ba'afatzim. If the klaf itself was tanned through using afatzim, roshmim aleim et ha'edim b'mei milim, then you can write with this material because the lo havi ktav. That's not considered to be ktav because the parchment itself is made with afatzim in it. The ink is made with afatzim. Sharei marei haklafim kemarei haktav. Then they have the same color or pigment in them. Veinu nikar. And therefore the writing is not clear. Hilkach emi milim al gabi mei milim. And for that reason, mei milim on top of a mei milim is no good. And so by doing that, you're using an ink that would not be classified as an ink. And therefore, when they edim write over it, they're actually doing the writing. So it leaves some light marking on the parchment, but it's not a real writing. And therefore, they can copy over that and sign their names because the first person who did it didn't really write over there. So that would be the difference between afitz and lo afitz. Shemi emilin agabi emilim. Rapapa mar barok. You do it with saliva. You roshem with the rok, and then they write on it. So again, either that gives some sort of little indication of where they're supposed to sign, whether it's because of the moisture that's there, or leaves some sort of marking on the parchment, and through that, they will know where to sign or how to sign on it. V'chein orile rapapa, rapapa Torah, barok. And that's what rapapa instructed to. Papa Torah would mean Papa the ox. Obviously, Papa is not an ox, but rather he's the ox dealer. So it's Papa the ox dealer. He told him to use Baruch. That's what he told him to do. In those cases where they needed to have somebody sign or write, they allowed you to use this type of rope or saliva, which clearly is not a permanent or indelible ink, to use that up front and then have the edim write on top of it, because then whatever you wrote up front was not considered writing. And when they write over it, that is considered to be writing. Bahani mile bikitin. All of these dispensations are true by gitin, but al shtarot, lo. That is not the case by regular shtarot, as Rashi says, and we'll see in the Gemara again, mishum iguna. This is a kula because of agunot, and therefore we won't be makpid on this. We'll use this kula to allow the edim that are here who don't know how to write, we'll have them sign on this case. Whereas by other shtarot, just find other edim that can sign on the shtar. Generally, when you have the edim on the shtar, the edim on the shtar are not so essential or irreplaceable. By the case of gitin, we only have a limited number of people who have the information, and it's essential to get this woman to be released and not be an aguna. And so for that reason, we are makel to allow these individuals who don't know how to sign, because otherwise we're going to lose them as edim, and then to find other edim to replace them is going to be very difficult, and we don't want to leave the woman in a difficult position. There was somebody who used this dispensation by other shtarot. V'nagdei Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana gave him malkot for misapplication of this halakha by using these kulot by a regular shtar and not just by a get. Tanya kavote de Rav. So we have a brayta that supports Rav's explanation. It's going all the way back. Here we're asking edim that don't know how to write, what do you do for them? Rav said, mikarim lehem niyar chalak. You rip or you tear a clean piece of paper. Again, Rashi says it means you etch into it, whereas others say that you create a stencil for them. So we have a brayta that supports Rav's. Edim shein yodim lachtom, mikarim lehem niyar chalak, malim et akraim dio. So here, that's exactly what Rav said. And again, this is a brayta that we quoted earlier on in Daf Tet, and this is where we discussed the inyan, and there we saw Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But where's that true? Begitei nashim. That's only true by a get. Aval b'shichurei abadim b'shar kol asherot. By other types of documents, including a document of emancipation. Im yodim likrot v'lachtom chotmim. If they know how to read and write, then they can sign. V'im lav ein chotmim. If not, they can't sign. So then the Gemara says, priya mandekar shmei. Why is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel discussing reading at all? The Tanna Kamma didn't mention anything about reading. The Gemara says, asurei mechzera. That you're missing some of the transition between the Tanna Kamma and the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But hachitani, edim shein yodim likrot. If the edim don't know how to read, korim lifnehem. Then you read the document to him, v'chotmim, and then they sign it. V'she'en yodim lachtom. And if they don't know how to sign, then what you do is you bring a nir chalak. You do the whole operation that they mentioned before, either etching or stencil. Amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, b'med var mamurim. When is this dispensation allowed? Begitei nashim. Avo shichrei avadim v'shar kol ha-shtarot. Im yodim likrot v'lachtom chotmim im lav ein chotmim. By other shtarot, if they know how to read and write, then they can read and write for the document. Otherwise, they're not good etim. I'm a Rabbi Elazar. My time with the Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. What's the reason behind Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position that this is only applicable by Gitei Nashim? Shlo yubnot Yisrael, agunot. Says it straight out. Now this is a takana for agunot, that we want to protect these women from being anchored, from being stuck. And therefore, we have these dispensations to allow for people who are literate, for people who do not know how to write, and we will use them, even though in other situations we'll just tell you, get better edim. Get someone who knows how to read. Get someone who knows how to write. Over here, we're going to give you this dispensation so that we can get the women out of this problem. Amar Rava, halacha ke Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. V'rav gamda mishmei d'Rav amar, ein halacha. Gamda, the name of Rava, says the halacha is not like him. V'alekeman. Then who does he hold like? If he doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who does he hold like? Kerabonon. He holds like the Rabbonon. Well, if you hold like the Rabbonon make no distinction between Gitim and Shtar Sharot. Vehahu, the last line on the previous Amud said, Hahu de Avad Uvda B'Shtar Sharot V'Nagdei Rav Kahana. So we saw in the last line there that Rav Kahana gave Malkot to somebody who used this dispensation by Shtar Sharot. Now if you bask him like the Rabbonon, I mean, what was Rav Kahana doing over here? Targama Akriya. That was an issue of Kriya. So the way Rashi explains it over here, Targama Akriya, Shim Dim Lachtom, Afopish Enyo Dim Likrot, Shapir Dami. They know how to sign, even though they don't know how to read, that's alright. Bikare Kamayu, Akrine Kerabonon. They read it in front of them like the Rabbonon. Ugrav Kahana Shenyo Dim Lachtom. That's the case where they don't know how to sign. So Rav Kahana said, no way by signing. If they don't know how to sign, we're not going to allow for this dispensation by Shar Shtarot. But over here, when Rav Gamda, in the name of Rava, says the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon, but rather like the Rabbonon, he was talking about the reading aspect. That if they don't know how to read, you can read it in front of them. And so therefore, their positions are not necessarily opposing or can be reconciled, because here they're saying the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that by other Shtarot you're allowed to read the Shtar to the individuals. So if they're illiterate, you can read it to them, even by other shtarot, and halacha like the Rabbanan. Rav Kahana was dealing with the signature aspect of it, and there Rav Kahana says, if you sign on other documents and use this dispensation of using a stencil or an etching, that we will not allow. Rav Yehuda mitztayer kari v'chotin. Rav Yehuda, when he already had reached a ripe old age, and it was difficult for him to read, mitztayer, he pressed himself, he pushed himself in order to read v'chotin, and then sign on it, because he believed that you have to read the shtar, and then sign on the shtar. And therefore he read the shtar himself, even though it was difficult for him, and then signed on it. Amalei ula lo tzarich. You don't need to do that. Da Rabbi Elazar Mara de Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Elazar, who is the authority in Eretz Yisrael, Karu Kamei V'Chatim. They read it to him, and then he signs on it. He doesn't physically read it himself, but they read it in front of him. For Rav Nachman, Karu Kamei Safrei Dayinei V'Chatim. And Rav Nachman also, the Sofrim of the judges, meaning the scribes of the court, the stenographers would read it for him, v'chatim, and then he would sign it. Now the Gemara qualifies that. Tosfot already earlier, when we discussed this during the Masechta, did the same thing. He qualifies this. V'dafka Rav Nachman, v'safrei dayone, di'lehu emta. The reason there is because of these two parties have a certain amount of fear in them, and that is, ava Rav Nachman, v'safrei achrine, Rav Nachman and any other sofrim, or safrei dayone v'ini shachrin alo. Or if these scribes and another individual, would not be true. It happens to be that the combination of being Rav Nachman and the sofrim, the combination makes it that it's okay. What was the combination makes it okay? Rav Nachman was the head of the Beit Din. He is, we know that, a big judge, a posek, because many times Rav Nachman, in terms of halachot, tells us information about a certain takanot that were put in place because he saw what was going on in the court cases. And he saw that people were cheating or people were having, like by Kofar Bakol, case of Kofar Bakol, Rav Nachman institutes a Shvuat Heset to stop people being Kofar Bakol because they know if they're Kofar Bakol, they won't have to take a Shvuah. So what did everybody do? Even though they might have been Modem Miksat, then they were Kofar Bakol. So if you institute a Shvuah by Kofar Bakol, it might change the dynamic. And Rav Nachman, who's a Dayan, recognizes the problem and he institutes it. So here, Rav Nachman is a Dayan. That's number one. Number two is, he's married into the household of the Beit Nasi. And so therefore, he has political power and halachic power. And so the two of those together create an environment in which the Sofrim would be scared to do something wrong or to lie about what was written in the contracts. Because not only is he a halachic authority, he has political power. And so then the Sofrim have an imta. And that imta allows us to know, or gives us the ability to feel comfortable that they're going to tell the truth. This has applications in many areas of halacha. We've spoken about it again, that governmental institutions can create an environment where people will act honestly or properly because of the fear of losing their job, of being caught by the government. And that fear factor can then make it that they are, for us, honest, or we can trust them in those cases because there's enough of an external pressure that forces them to act properly that accomplishes the equivalent of getting an honest answer or a deem to tell us that this is true. So this is one of those cases where Rav Nachman's position causes Sofrim to know that if they played around with this, they'd get into trouble, and therefore we could trust the Sofrim to read it to Rav Nachman. But what it establishes is that you need trustworthy people to read the document to you. Because otherwise, you could be signing on whatever they tell you they're signing on, and it could be a real problem. So, Rav Papa, Kiva'ata l'kamei shtara parsa. Rav Papa, when he used to get a Persian contract that came in front of him, David barkaot shel kutim, that was put together in a non-Jewish court, makri l'hu l'shnei kutim ze shelo bifnei ze. So, Rav Papa solves the problem, and he's basically, right, he gets an independent verification. He has two different individuals, read it to him, the Messiah l'fi tumo. And not only does it do it in a way that makes it that he has independent verification, he also basically talks to them in a conversation. He doesn't make it sound like this is an official document or that there's going to be halachic ramifications of what they're doing. He just discusses it with them. And in discussing with them, he says, oh, can you just tell me, can we discuss what this means? And then he speaks to them and then they translate it for him on the fly. So first of all, they're not looking to change or do anything because they think it's a informal conversation. And in that informality, he does it twice independently, and that gives him verification as to what's in there. Umagmi beimi mishabde. And once he does that, he was willing through that shtar to collect from encumbered property. So now Gemara says, Amar Ravashi, Amar li Ravuna Barnatan, Achi Amar Meimar, Hai shtar parsa, dechatim alei sade Yisrael. If you have this Persian contract that has Jewish signatories, magmi beimi mishabde. Because then you can take from Mishubadim. Again, we had this back on Daf Yud Aleph. The Gemara says, how could you do that? How could you take from Mishabde? Remember that the Edim that sign on it are basically the kol. They become the publicity surrounding this contract or this loan that's taken out. And that's what protects the other creditors or buyers of the land because they know that there's already an encumberment on this property or this individual. But here, how do they know? Ba'alo yodei the mikre. They don't know what they're reading. Persian was not the spoken language of the people. And so therefore here they see Persian, they don't know what they're writing. How could the signatures mean anything? Bidiyade. They know how to read Persian. They're fluent in Persian. Vabi'inan k'tav sheinu yachol hizdayef. Veleka. You have to have writing on there that cannot be erased, or basically has to be indelible, so that somebody can't play around with the contract and erase and change the numbers or change the information inside of it. And you don't have that. So Gemara says, bidda afitzan. Now it's a case here where the parchment was tanned using this afitzan. And again, that's where we bumped into the Tosafot and this Rabbeinu Tam, that we don't use afitzim, we don't use these galls, but we use sid instead. We use some sort of lime base that accomplishes the same effect, which is that if you erase on it, it's noticeable, or you can see that it was erased on. Vabinan tzarich lagzor min yano shel shtar b'shita achrona. Don't we need that you repeat that which is at the first line of the shtar, at the bottom of the shtar? Again, we discussed over there the reasons for that, either because the signatories will be then right up against it, or to know that it's the end of the shtar, so somebody doesn't come and add information afterwards. Veleka, and that's missing here as well. They did that. Over there, they did that as well in the shtar. So then what is he teaching us in the end? The b'chol lashon kasher. That it doesn't matter what language the shtar is written in, and it's good as long as they understand it and they know what they're signing to. Any language is fine by shtarot. Okay, we'll discuss this in a minute. What Rashi brings over here is that back on Daf Yud Aleph, the Gemara there says that when you have this Persian contract, you're allowed to take from free and clear property, not from encumbered property. So then how come over here all of a sudden the Gemara is saying you can take from encumbered property? So Rashi notes the difference that over there was a case where Hejotot were doing it. It was done by lay people. And so by lay people, there's no kol associated with it. Whereas over here, since it was done in a court, even though it was a secular court, it has a kol associated with it. And that's why he allowed, even though they were done in a secular court and it was in Persian, and there were Jewish signatories to it, over here he says you can take from Mishabdei because it was done in a formal court setting. Over there it was done by lay people, so then they were willing to say the contract can be upheld, but we're not going to use that contract to collect from encumbered property because it was never publicized. It never got out in the public forum. People wouldn't know about it. Whereas if it's done in the court system, people know about it, especially if the Jews are signing on it. Right now the Gemara says, Tanina, why do you have to tell me that you can write a document, you can write a contract in any language? We already have a Mishnah that tells you that. Get shikatavo ivrit ve'edav yivanit. If you have a get that's written in Hebrew and its signatories are Greek, yivanit ve'edav ivrit, or it's written in Greek and the signatories are writing in Hebrew, kasher. It's a Mishnah further on. What do you need to tell me this whole din over here that you can have a contract in any language? That's already known later on in the Masechta. So Gemara says, imehahi, from the Mishnah later on, avamina hani mili b'gitin. This is Masechet Gitin. And we think that the Mishnah is telling you that this is true by Gitin. Aval b'shar shtarot, lo. By other contracts, that's not the case. Kamash malon, that this is application by other shtarot as well. That language is not a barrier to the validity of a contract. As long as, again, it's understood, and the people who signed on it understood what it was, either because it was read to them by trustworthy individuals, or translated by trustworthy individuals, and then signed by people who understood it. And then the nature of where it's done, who signed on it, will have application as to how much enforcement we will do with this contract. We will only take from free and clear property, or either from encumbered property. Amar Shmuel, Natana Niyar Chalak. What happens if he hands her a blank piece of paper? This is your get. Migureshet. She is divorced. Chashinan Shema b'mei milim katavo. We're afraid that maybe he wrote it with mei milim. Again, we already saw the mei milim before, which is the mei milim is the, as Rashi says, made out of afatzim. It's made out of gall. And so when you write with the gall on top of the parchment that's already has gall in it, the writing gets absorbed into the parchment and is not visible. So maybe that's what you have here. You have an invisible ink that is written here. And the get is a good get. Meitvei. Hareze giteich. This is your get. Vinatalto, vizarakto liyam. Takes it, throws it into the ocean, olo ur, or into a fire, olo chodavar haveit, or anything that destroys it. V'chazav ramar. And then the Baal says afterwards, ah, shtar pasimu, shtar amanahu. Megureshet. She's divorced. Then he doesn't have a right to change the facts on the ground here. Shtar pasim, Rashi over here says that a shtar pasim is a shtar piyusim, which is a shtar that is used to make a person look wealthier than they really are. And basically it's a document that says this individual owes them a ton of money, and therefore they are trustworthy, creditworthy, and are rich. And so that gave them a certain amount of standing, even though the shtar is not true. He does it with someone who trusts him to write a shtar like this, and that he won't collect with that shtar. He won't come afterwards and collect. So it gives them a standing without it actually being a real shtar. That's called the shtar pasim. Shtar amana is a shtar that the creditor holds. It's basically a credit line that is opened by a creditor to a debtor. They write the contract, and he leaves it in the hands of the creditor. And he says, if I draw down on the credit line, then you can use this contract as a means to collect. And he trusts the creditor not to take it out if he doesn't draw it down on the line. So that's called a shtar amana. So in these cases, we say that the baal doesn't have a right to back out afterwards and say, it wasn't a get. I didn't give you a get. Taima deikatav. From that, it sounds like, from this tosefta, that it's only because we saw that there was something written on there. Ha lekatav lo. So that if there's nothing written on it, then you wouldn't say that. It means that there's some document that came that had writing on it. He said, this is your get, except they accept it and they try to throw it out. And it's gone. So now we have no way to verify what was written in there. But we know something was written in there, because even the Baal, when he comes back and makes a claim, he says it was a shtar pasim, a shtar amana. He says that it was something else. But he doesn't say it was a blank piece of paper. So it's clear that there was some sort of writing on it. So then how can Shmuel say that you have a blank piece of paper that you say, oh, that's a good get if he says that. Ki kamar Shmuel, debat kinyan le b'maya denaro. No, there we check it with waters of Nara. I polit polit, I lo polit, lav klumhu. So that if it exudes, meaning that it becomes visible, that which is written on it, then we say fine. If nothing becomes visible when you do this test, then it's no good. First of all, what's this maya denaro? Rashi over here says, seva shikorim, foily, umarvin made seva alav, then you rub these pigment on top of it, upalate otiot shabala, then it exudes the letters that were already there, vinirot, so it's this type of invisible ink that when you put this other pigment on top of it, it causes those letters to be visible, right? You know, as kids, they used to have those books where you'd color them and all of a sudden the ink would show up in them, even though it was a clear item that you were rubbing on top of them. The combination of the two chemicals causes it to be visible. So the same thing over here. That's what happens. Tosfot over here says, Mayer denaro, perish rach, make klipat rimon. That is, waters from the skins of a pomegranate. V'chein baruch. So that he says that was the pigmentation that they were using over here to draw out the letters that were written there. So Gemara says, V'chi polit mayhavi. If it comes out, if afterwards it exudes the lettering that's there, and now we know there was something written there, why does it matter? Hashtahu the polit. It's not that there was writing there before, and now we can see that writing. There was nothing there before, and now you can see the writing. That's not a good get. You need to get. It needs to be written, and has to be writing on it when you hand it over. So Shmuel nami chashinin kamar. Shmuel doesn't say that it is a get. He says that we worry that it is a get. We're choshesh for the fact that it was a get. So now Rashi says, what does that mean that we're choshesh that it was a get? Shemalo nivlu'u yafeh. Because maybe when he handed the get, it was not absorbed completely, and therefore, it was a good get. So what you have here are stages along the way. When you first write with the mei milin, or you write on this document, it is visible. Over time, it is absorbed into the parchment that has the same pigment in it, and then it becomes invisible, which can be brought out by this other chemical, or this other pigment. So what Shmuel is worried about is that interim stage. If it was blank when she got it, and then we're able to bring out the letters, it's not meaningful at all, because she didn't receive anything that had ketav on it. On the other hand, if the writing was readable or visible when she got it, but then was absorbed later on, and now through pigmentation we can see that there was lettering there, then Shmuel's choshesh that there was a visible writing when she got the get. Now, obviously, if it turns out there's nothing there when we do the test, then it's of course not a get, and Shmuel believes that. That's what Tosfot says over here. Miu vaday ibad kine velo polit lav kumhu. Certainly, if they check it and there's nothing there, then it's not a get for sure. That we know. But even if they don't check it now, we are going to be choshesh that there was something visible there when he handed over the get. Tosfot over here on the previous Tosfot discuss v'yesh lomar kevin demar hazeh kiteich b'devar mu'at mehemen en l'baal. Since the Baal went ahead and said this was a get, even though there are a lot of questions surrounding the difficulty or the problems here with the get, nevertheless we believe the husband even with the smallest item. Why? Hol b'yadol gashah. He has the right and the ability to divorce her, and therefore if he comes along and says I am divorcing her and this is a get, we will take his word for it. We'll take him literally at his word and assume that it's a get. Even though there are a lot of questions about this get over here, problems with this get, we're going to assume that it is a get unless we have evidence to the contrary. And Tosfot over here says that the case is where the Edim seemingly saw it from afar. They weren't close to the get when it was given. And from afar, it looked like a blank page. So now when they come over here to look at the get, they see that it really is a blank page. So now, are we choshesh? And that's what the answer of Shmuel is. We're choshesh, that there really was a get, because the husband said it was a get, and maybe the letters were visible at some point in time. Amar Ravina, Amar Liyam Eymar, Hachi Amar Mereymar Mishmei Durabdimi, Hani Beitrei, Diyoib Gita Kamayu, Tzrichei the Mikre. This is something that we were expecting for a long time, and the Masechta now only shows up now, which is that the Eidei Mesira, which according to Rabbi Elozer, make this into an effective get, because Eidei Mesira Karte, they need to read the get in order for them to testify about the fact that there was a get here. That seems like obvious advice, that if you're going to be a witness to an event, that you better know what's written in this item. Meitve. Hare zeh giteich, min ataltov zarakto liyam, odo or, odo chol dabar aveit, gazar mar shtar pasim hu, shtar manahu migureshet, v'lo kol emenu l'osra. So here you have that case that we just brought before from the Tosefta, which says that when you have the get and it's thrown out, that get is considered to be a good get because he said it was a good get and he can't change his mind afterwards and say it wasn't a good get. He gave it to her and then it got thrown out. So the Gemara says, V'yamar tzricha l'mikre, if the Edim have to read it, batu d'karyua mi matzi amar lohochi, how can the Baal then deny that it was a get after the Edim read the get that he had in hand? Lo tzricha, the batu d'karyua aile lebe yadei ve'afke. After they read it, he took back the possession of the get, and then he took it out. Maybe he switched it with another document. Kamash Malan, that he didn't do that. So again, what he does is he takes it back, tak knafav, meaning that the Edim read it, and then they hand it back to the Baal to give to the woman. When they hand it back to the Baal, he puts it inside his cloak, or he puts it under his hand, and then he hands her a document. So maybe we should worry about the fact that he switched the document in the interim. The answer is we don't worry about it. So even though Edim read it, and we know that it's a good get, still, you could have worried about the fact that he swatted the paper out, and maybe he's telling the truth. The answer is, we don't worry about that, and then it's considered to be a get. If he gave it as a get, and they didn't read it as a get, it's a get. And we don't even worry about him switching it out. Just to note that Tosfot over here says that when the Edim have to read it, he says that it's obvious that kodem netina iri, that they have to read it before he gives it to the woman. And that the Edim should read the get, not once the woman has received it, but rather when before the husband gives it over to the woman, because they want to be Edim to the Mesira, and they know that the Mesira was a get that was given. We don't want them reading it after the fact to get that information. Now, V'ilo Karya Nired Lavi Get, and he says, if you don't read it, then it won't be a get. Tosfot then later on backs away from it and says, if they don't read it, maybe that's only Pasul Echatchila, but if she gets married based on this get, and then they only read it afterwards, and they see that it's a get, maybe that's sufficient b'di'avad to allow her to get married. And he says that Hariyaragil, the really quote, kodem netina, ulachar netina. He used to have them read the get before it was given, and after it was given. That way we're sure what the Baal is giving. And then when the woman gets it, we're sure what she received. And therefore they deem knew for sure, and they could witness that there was a mesirat to get over here. Mibshita di lokara kodem netina, v'karda achar netina, davar pashut hu d'migureshet. Again, if they don't read it beforehand, but they read it afterwards, it's clear that she is migureshet. So Tosfot over here says that the best way to do it is to read before. The Ri has them read it before and afterwards. He says clearly if they read it afterwards, she is divorced. And if there is no reading over here, he says that b'diavad, if she gets married on that, we're not going to say it's a pasul get, but l'chatchila, we're not going to get married if the Edim never read the get. How gabra, the zarg lagita debitu, the beni dane. This individual threw a get to his wife, and it landed amongst the jars or the barrels that were there. And then they went, ishtakach mezuzta. And they went and they pulled out from the jars over there, that instead of being a get there, they find a document that is a mezuzah. So now, Amar Rav Nachman, mezuzta ben itani lo shchicha. People don't keep mezuzot amongst the pitchers, jars, or barrels there. And therefore, when we pick this up, we assume that's what he threw over there, and it's not a good get. That's only if they find one over there. If they find one over there, and this is not a normal place to store it, then the document that he threw at her was not a get, it was a mezuzah. The other hand, about bet v'gimel, if they find two or three of these documents, means the mezuzot there. Since we assume, of course, the other two were there before this event, because he only threw one document, so too this one that we found is also that. The gita, so where's the get that we can't find? Imur achbarim shaklua. We'll say that the mice came along and walked off some sort of rodent and walked off with the get and took it back to its hole. That's a good get that the woman is divorced based on this because he said he gave her a get. Even though we can't find the get here and we're finding other documents there. The fact that we're finding multiple documents show that the document we found is not what he threw there because otherwise we'd only find one. The fact that we found multiple documents shows that this is not what he threw there. Ah, what happened to the get? The mice walked off with the get. An individual went into a shul, shakal sefer Torah, he takes out the sefer Torah, yoiv lo debitu, he hands it to his wife and says, Amrala, hagitech, this is your get. Amar Rav Yosef, amay lechushla. What do we have to worry about here? Im ishum mei milim, in mei milim, agabi mei milim. If you're worried about the fact that he wrote the mei milim and that's not visible now, it doesn't matter, because the parchment has afatzim in it, the ink has afatzim in it. When you write with mei milim, it's not considered writing. So even if he did that and it's an invisible ink, it will not be considered good writing over here. Im ishum kritut idba. If it's because you have the kritut in it, meaning that the parsha of Gitin is found in the Torah, habinim bekotov la. It has to be written lishma. It has to be written verb, aleka, and that's lacking over here. Let it say that he, when the sofer was writing the Sefer Torah, he says, write this on behalf of my wife, so it should be a get. When you get to the Parsha of Gitin, write that as if it's for my wife. You need to have the names of the individuals in there, and that's lacking. Meaning that you're missing the Torah Haget. Kroah takes out the word Shina. But rather, you just need Shmo, Shma, Shemiro, Shemira, and that's missing. Rav Yosef, Maika Mashmalan. So then why is Rav Yosef telling us all this information? Take Mashmalan, Shem Mei Milin, Al-Kabi Mei Milin. He's coming to teach us that then, that when you write with this invisible ink, because it's the same pigment as the parchment, that's not considered to be writing, and that's not a good get. And that's the Chiddush that comes out of the words of Rav Yosef. Tosfot over here discusses the fact that in Masechet Sotah, we saw that you could do this. If the Parshat Sotah was written Lishma for Mechikat Parshat Sotah, it would work. So how come it works over there by Sotah, and it doesn't work over here? Over there, you also need to be Bikot of Law. We need to be for her, written for the specific woman. So he says, either Rav Yosef doesn't hold like that Gemara over there. It's Machloket Amoraim, and they argues over there. Inami Savar Ki'idach Tana the Savar Ein Mochakim La Mina Torah. Or, he holds like the other Tana who says you can't erase out of the Sefer Torah. So that's one approach that Tosfot takes, that Rav Yosef disagrees. And these are actually sugyot chalukot. On the other hand, he brings V'od Nira, Tefilo Manda Machshim Megillat Sotah Limchok Min HaTorah, Afagav Dubai Lishma Modeh Le'inyan Get to Pasul. Says now he creates a distinction that says it's not a question at all, because the Megillat Sotah is different than the Megillat Gitin, or the Sefer Kritut that you need. Because by sota, yilat sota stama kasher mishum de mistama shein a kohen shalav lichtov makpid umistama nechalei, and it's useful for him. Now he has a parshat sota ready to use. Aval gabe get baal stama lo lechalei. By the get, a baal doesn't automatically assume that if you just write it for a get, that'll be good for me. I'll use that. So what he says over here is that in order for a parshat sota to qualify as a parshat sota, that's not such a big deal because there. Lishma means it just has to be written for the purpose of being used as a parshat sotah. The person who would ask for it to be written is a kohen, and the kohen is fine with having it being written ahead of time. There's no downside to them. On the other hand, the baal will not allow that to happen. He's not going to have somebody write a get out of his auspices or say, no, this is for you, or have this be lishma. And therefore, over here, he would agree that it doesn't work. You can't create the lishma within the Sefer Torah in this case, and that's how he differentiates between the two different situations. Okay, we're going to stop here, six lines down on the top of Chof Amud Aleph.